just seems like the French have a lock on leading the good life. They don't get fat, their children are better behaved, and now, as we're learning this hour, they know how to educate their kids about food. According to our guest this hour, French kids eat all kinds of food. They don't need to snack endlessly, and they have impeccable table manners. Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickert, keeping you company this hour on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is Karen LeBillon. She's the author of French Kids Eat Everything, How Our Family Moved to France, Cured Picky Eating, Banned Snacking, and Discovered 10 Simple Rules for Raising Happy, Healthy Eaters. And we want to know what you think. Why are so many American kids picky eaters, and how do you deal with your own? Our number, 1-800-642-1234. And Karen LeBillon, nice to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So French kids, do they really eat everything? It seems seems pretty striking to an American parent.
You know, most French kids will eat most things. And of course there are picky eaters in France, just like everywhere. But they have a culture and an approach to teaching kids about eating that means that there are fewer what I would call picky food behaviors that we tend to think of as normal in North America. And that's what I wanted to write the book about, to explain how basically you can teach kids to eat happily and avoid food fights.
Well, your story really begins when you and your family moved to Brittany with your French husband and two daughters. And at one point early on, you go to your daughter's new preschool and you're munching on these elegant little puffy hors d'oeuvres. And it turns out to be quite a different scenario than you thought. Could you tell us that story?
Yeah, we were invited to an information meeting, and I thought it would be sort of, you know, meet the nurse and be shown where the kids wash their hands and talk about hygiene. And instead, we were greeted by a kind of cocktail party scenario where the staff had cooked these lovely dishes, nicely presented on trays, little puff pastries topped with beautiful colored mousses of different, you know, textures. And so I thought, how wonderful, and I started sampling. And then I realized that I was the only parent sampling, and that's because these were not treats for the adults, although they looked like fancy hors d'oeuvres at a cocktail party back home. These were actually treats for the children, and they were samples of the purees that were going to be on the menu the following week at the daycare. Because, of course, they had an in-house cook who prepared a three-course scratch-cooked meal every day at the daycare. And food diversification, as they call it, is a central part of education of young children. So I got over the glares and my embarrassment and the embarrassment that resulted from the fact that my daughter would not eat the beet puree she was offered. And it was amazing because at the time I felt humiliated, and the staff calmly told me, don't worry, she'll learn to like it. And within a couple of weeks, she had learned to like it.
Wow. So that must have been a big moment for you. You must have realized that this was not going to be the same scenario that you were used to with kids and eating and food.
Yeah, we're not in Kansas anymore. I mean, it was really shocking to me to see how well the kids ate at the daycare. The menus for the daycare and for the school were posted on the door when you came every morning. So you would see that the kids were eating roast fish or cauliflower puree or beet salad. Often when the parents picked their kids up after school, the first thing they would ask is, how did you enjoy your lunch and what did you eat and what did you enjoy and taste? And food was very central to everyone's day, and that, in addition to what they were actually eating, was something I had to get my head around, because like most North Americans, or many of us, you know, I would sort of regard food as kind of an interruption in my day, gobble food, eat on the run, and that's part of the reason my kids had fallen into what we would call the beige food diet, Cheerios and fishy crackers. But they got over it during the year in France and went from eating a very few foods to loving things like mussels and muesli and beet salad. And that transformation was one of the things that made me want to write the book.
Well, in terms of what we think our children do and don't like, we kind of let kids dictate some of what they eat here, and we'll offer it a few times. And if we strike out, say, three or four times, that might be kind of it. But one thing that was really striking to me in reading this was that it sounds as though French parents present foods way more than that. I mean, we're talking 7 to 15 times they present the food.
Yeah, so the French believe that learning to eat is a lot like learning to read. It takes years. You have to practice in an atmosphere of loving parental support and, as it turns out, support from the school where they also get taught to eat. So children will be offered vegetables or new foods frequently and be offered the chance to practice. And in fact, research has shown in the U.S. as well as in France that children need to taste new foods, not look at them, but taste them between 7 and 12 times before they'll learn to accept to eat them and eventually like them. So they're learning just like you'd learn the alphabet and then learn words and eventually be reading on your own. So the French, knowing this, don't give up. If the child doesn't like it, that's fine. They take it away without a fuss. There's no force, but they'll offer it again at some point in the future. Now, what's interesting is this doesn't mean that you sit in front of the child and keep forcing them to eat it. It means it might reappear a week later. Because another thing the French do is have a lot more variety than we do. One of the French food rules that I discovered, and that is part of the school menu at French schools, is you don't repeat the same dish more than once a month in the case of the schools, but we decided on once a week at our house. So that means that you cannot be serving pasta every night, which is, in fact, what we had been doing. And that variety alone gets kids used to trying new things.
Well, and you had a moment of panic, right, about your daughter when you saw the school lunch menu. There was, not pasta on it every day, which is what she was used to eating. And in fact, these French kids were eating 4-course meals, including a cheese course, every day.
And I blog about those menus because they're fabulous, because they're inspiring, and because they show that French food education works. So every week I go to a different place in France. Not fancy places. I blogged a few months ago, for example, about the menu in the school in the poorest village in France. They still had a pretty impressive-sounding menu, and they do not have a national school lunch program. There are no subsidies from federal government. There are no bulk commodity purchase programs. This is organized locally and paid for locally, and the average cost is between $3 and $4 per child per meal. Low-income families typically pay less, and they end up with this 4-course menu, typically with a vegetable starter, because kids are hungry when they sit down, and so the vegetables are served first on the theory that they'll eat more of them, and they do. So they might have a beet salad or a grated carrot salad to start with. Then they'll have a main course with some kind of protein, usually fish or meat or maybe a legume, with a vegetable side. At my daughter's school, they also get baguette, plain baguette, but one piece per child, so they can't fill up on bread. Then a dairy course with yogurt or cheese, and sometimes even stinky cheese, even for preschoolers. I remember one menu in Versailles, they had roast guinea fowl, and preschoolers eating roquefort, and then fresh fruit 4 days a week, but a sweet treat the fifth, because the French believe it's all about moderation, not deprivation, that the kids should want to come to the table at school and at home, and so, nice fresh fruit, but also croissant au chocolat or éclair au chocolat or a cake or something with crème anglaise, these all appear on the menu as well. And so I love the reaction people have to those menus. Often people say to me, I would love to have this for lunch. I can't believe three-year-olds are eating this. And so I think this is something really that should give us food for thought. I'm not saying we need to eat like that or eat like the French, but we need to be more, I think, optimistic about what our kids are capable of eating.
Well, one question that comes to mind is, how long are these kids spending at lunch during a school day? Because, for example, at my kids' school, in winter they eat in their coats and then they head out to the playground and it's maybe a 10-minute, 15-minute affair.
Right. That's such a great point. The minimum amount of time at lunch is an hour and a half break, and sometimes it's 2 hours. At my daughter's school, for example, it's 2 hours.
2 hours.
The French regulations from the National Ministry of Education is they have to be sitting at the table for a minimum of 30 minutes. Usually it takes more. And then they get at least an hour to play. And sometimes there are what they call animations, so they'll put on little cultural activities or fun activities for the kids. It's meant to be a restorative pause in the day so that they come back to afternoon classes recharged. Having eaten well, they're going to actually be able to study better. And, of course, the teachers also need their break because everyone stops in France, or most people, for a good hour, hour and a half. In the north, stores would close for 2 hours a day outside of the big cities. And in the south of France, stores close usually between 12:30 and 4:30 so that people can go home and have a proper meal, because for them it's one of the priorities. You know, they don't do as many after-school activities for their kids. They don't schedule them like we schedule our kids. On the other hand, they do spend a lot more time basically eating with them and teaching them how to eat well. And although I was reluctant to admit it at first, I think that kind of makes sense. You know, I doubt my daughter, as much as I love seeing her dance, is going to grow to be a ballet dancer. So ballet lessons, great. But, you know, often we would do those sorts of after-school activities at the expense of our dinner hour. So one of the things we decided to do as a family, no more after-school activities that conflict with our family dinner hour, which is at a scheduled time.
That's a commitment to eating, because pretty much everything takes place after school, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but we've also adopted the French habit of a structured meal routine. They eat three times a day. This starts at about 1 year old, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then a snack in the afternoon around 4 p.m., no random snacking. But that after-school snack, which is a substantial mini meal, allows them to hang on longer, so we've pushed back our dinner hour. But it happens at the same time, and there are no exceptions. We're not going to eat on the run. We're not going to eat in the car. We're not going to eat, you know, at the pool after swimming lessons. And that sounds a little strict, I guess. But at the same time, family meals became so much fun that it's actually a source of pleasure. And this is the big thing that's so great about the French approach. None of this is done to be strict or to punish kids. It's actually a source of family togetherness, because food is fun for the French. It's a great, shared social pleasure. The family table is where parents are most relaxed, where they tell the best stories, where everyone talks about their day. And so this is actually positive for kids. Lots of studies have shown that it improves their physical health, their mental health, their school performance. So that family meal tradition is something that I think now I've learned we should really hold on to. It's not a lesson I accepted right away.
So if you're talking about family meals, these are not restaurant meals. These are meals in your home. How do you find time to prepare all of that food? I know it's something a lot of people struggle with, especially in working families where you've got the husband and the wife or both partners working.
Yeah, and we both work. We have demanding jobs. I have no help at home. I do all my groceries and all my own cooking. I have a cleaning lady who comes once a week, and I love her, and it's my favorite day of the week. But that's it. So I know, and I can relate. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of organization. But when I saw the French, one thing I noticed is that they have the same rate of women, of moms working outside the home that Americans do, and their work days are as long or longer. So it's not like French families have some mythical sort of arrangement where they can go to the market every day and they have lots of spare time. No, they have the pressures we do, long commutes, demanding jobs, etc. So I looked at the statistics and I found that the French only spend 18 minutes more per day cooking than we do. And I was intrigued by that. But then I realized it's because they actually are very efficient about cooking. The meals they cook at home are not like the meals you'd see in a fancy French restaurant. Cooking at home is simple. It privileges the fresh taste of ingredients. So the recipes I have in the book have an average of 4 ingredients and take only 10 minutes to make. And by observing my in-laws and my relatives and friends and people in the village and seeing this, I realized, okay, I could do this. Because it's not that it's complicated. It's just that they're organized and they can quickly get food on the table. And then prioritize actually eating with their family, which is, for me at least, the fun part. As you, if you've read the book, you'll note that I am like kind of an anti-Julia child. When we moved to France, mm-hmm. I didn't own a single French cookbook, and I was not someone who liked spending a lot of time in the kitchen. So this is not about slaving over the stove, but it is about a new approach to being, you know, organized and having these handy recipes and making it a priority in your day, but it's not necessarily more time-consuming.
One thing that really comes across is the reverence with which food is approached in France. And, for example, the French will not sit at a table that is not dressed, as they call it. That's a minimum of a tablecloth. I mean, that alone, that's a huge cultural shift.
Yes, and it sounds a bit stuffy, but this is French people of all income backgrounds, and it's not. We didn't live in Paris. We did not have a kind of a bourgeois experience. We lived in a small fishing village in rural Brittany, where my husband grew up, and so this is middle, the equivalent of I guess middle America, and so all French people do this. And what's interesting is that by having these little rituals, they signal to themselves, and especially to the kids, that what they're doing is important, and what they're doing is something to take note of. And so rather than food being just an inconvenience or something you do in a hurry in order to get onto your real activity of the day, food eating is an activity, and it's an activity to be celebrated. So dress, you know, we found actually that even the simple act of putting a tablecloth on got the kids to approach eating in a different way. And I've had lots of readers write to me and say that this kind of had a magical effect on their kids as well. And it doesn't take much time. It's just a habit. And once you've got the habit, you know, things can really change around the table.
I was going to ask how people are responding to this book, because lately it seems as though there have been quite a number of books telling us about how the French have all of these cultural advantages, and you know, they don't get fat, and their kids are better behaved and know how to comport themselves in society. And now this about food. Are you getting any pushback about, you know, just feeling...
Well, you know, it's such a great question. You know, I am not an advocate of French parenting. I could not have written a book talking about how the French are better parents. You know, I'm bilingual. I'm actually been married to a Frenchman and lived in France, had my kids in school in both places, and taught in universities in France and in North America. So I've seen kids from cradle to college. And so I actually think that there are many values that we teach our kids, including empathy and a can-do attitude, that the French could learn from, and that some of the strategies they use to produce obedience in young children backfire when the kids are older. So I have very mixed feelings about this whole debate, and my book doesn't actually promote French parenting. But I do think they have French, they do have food figured out. And one of the reasons is that it's so culturally important to them in general. But another reason is because 100 years ago, the French had one of the highest infant mortality rates in Europe. It was a huge concern, and they actually founded the modern science of child rearing, which in French is called puériculture. For example, they invented the incubator, and they launched the first scientific studies of infant nutrition. So they have a longer history than we do of trying to figure out how to feed children and how to feed them in a way that encourages them to expand their palates and get over this universal phase of pickiness. All around the world, children display a picky phase, which starts at about 2 and peaks at about 5 and decreases, if handled appropriately, at about the age of 10 or 11. And the French have figured out these common sense routines and teaching strategies that I embody in the book as these French food rules, these healthy eating routines. And they've done so because they had a real historical reason for doing so, and a lot of these are scientifically based. So sharing this is done on the, you know, the basis that this isn't just an argument about cultural superiority. It's about sharing some interesting insights and lessons from a country that has struggled with this issue for a long time. For example, has struggled with the issue of what they call the McDonaldization of food culture. About 10 years ago, they noticed their obesity rates were going up dramatically, especially amongst children. Now, they had very low obesity rates compared to us, but even the small increase was of concern. So they banned vending machines in schools, banned fast food, improved the nutritional quality of the school lunch menus, and introduced what they call taste training in schools to teach children how to like a whole range of foods and eat better. And their obesity rates have actually gone down. It's about 1 in 10 for overweight and obese kids in France versus 1 in 3 in the U.S. And they're the only wealthy country which has such low obesity rates for kids and in which obesity rates are going down. So there's some real scientific proof and some real experience and thought that have gone into the French approach. So I do think we need to reflect on how they've done things differently and what we could take, because I think we desperately need to do something. in American schools, and you know, given the health implications of what we're feeding our kids.
Well, our guest this hour is Karen LeBion. She's the author of French Kids Eat Everything. And we're taking a look at these 10 rules that the French use to educate their children about food and cure picky eating, among other things, and wondering about your experience teaching your kids to eat and enjoy food. For instance, are we right to let our kids play with their food and to have so much of a say often in their food choices? The French don't. I'm Veronica Rickert, and it's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk with our guest Karen LeBion. She's the author of French Kids Eat Everything, How Our Family Moved to France, Cured Picky Eating, Banned Snacking, and Discovered 10 Simple Rules for Raising Happy, Healthy Eaters. And we take our first phone call now. John joining us from Waukesha. Hi, John.
Hi, Veronica. I just want to say you do a great job on WPR.
Oh, thank you.
And to Karen, I have a lot of respect for you. I think that this book is good, and it required a certain amount of courage, too, to write it. And I can't wait to get it because I have a friend that I've watched them raise their child from birth on. She's five now, and the junk that this child has ingested, the amount of visits to fast food this child has been to outnumbers what I have done till probably 18. Like, we barely, it was a big treat to go to Burger King once in a blue moon, and you know, I'm 45, but now it seems like in this generation kids are going through drive-throughs like multiple times a week, if not maybe a time a day. But my you know, you answered my question about obesity, so what I was going to ask is maybe a little deeper point, which is you know, you raised that point that you wouldn't want to really discipline like a French, but you would, you know, it's kind of ironic that they have this strictness and respect, if you will, about food, which is awesome, and that we can learn from. But in this country, we have it backwards, where we don't really respect our food. We think it's great to just eat a hot dog or a brat and don't even think nothing about it, and it's changing. But, you know, at the same time, we may be more strict than some people are, at least, on their children. So I think that's a very interesting point you raised. Maybe you want to just dive back into that and maybe a little bit of how we are, you know, why we are the way we are, and you know, and why we eat such junk. Thank you.
All right. All right. Thanks for the call, John. And Karen?
Wow, what a great point. I mean, the French have structure and respect for food in an atmosphere where food is a lot of fun, and we have less structure and less respect, I think, for food, and we're really anxious about food. Let me give you an example. There was a big study done about 10 years ago, and they studied about 7,000 Americans and French people and asked them a whole bunch of questions. And one was, they showed them a picture of a really delicious-looking chocolate cake, and they said, what's the first word that pops into your mind when you see this cake? Most Americans said guilt or calories, but most French people said celebration or pleasure. So what's fascinating is the French worry less about food, yet they eat better. And they actually know less about nutrition than we do. On international surveys, Americans know way more than anyone else. They score like 9 out of 10. The French score 4 out of 10. Yet they still eat better than we do, which means that somehow we've lost our way. But I think that it's not so difficult to recover some of the very good eating routines and healthy habits that we used to have. When we look back to the 1970s, we actually used to eat a lot like the French. So the caller said that, you know, he's 45. He used to go to Burger King once in a while. It was a big treat when he was growing up. Actually, if you look at snacking behavior, caloric consumption, anything you want to think about, we actually ate a lot like the French till the 1970s, and then something changed. So, you know, it's not that our North American culture is intrinsically bad with respect to food, but I think we've succumbed to a lot of pressures with respect to marketing and the lure of fast food and junk food. But the good news is we can do something about it. And that's what the end of the book talks about, what we can actually do about it, because, of course, we move back to North America and we're confronted with all of this stuff. And that's what turned me into a bit of a food activist and actually led me to write the book in the first place.
Well, thank you for that call. And we'll go next to Wendy joining us in Oconomowoc. Hi there, Wendy.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I don't seem to have as big of a problem with my kids eating as other people do in my area. And I think some of it is because I see some parents, some mothers, come home from working all day and they have kids of various ages, and they're making separate meals for all of them. And so everyone, so a couple times a week, they just get so frustrated with that that they go out to fast food because they just don't want to cook three or four meals in one evening. And I can understand that, you know, but when you're feeding a 10-year-old something different than you're feeding the 2-year-old, and then your teenager won't eat that, then you're making something different for them. You know, we didn't do that in our family. Once the kids got over a year old to the early toddler stage, and they ate whatever the family ate.
That's such a great point. That's
I'm glad you brought that up, Wendy. Yeah, that's one of the rules, isn't it, Karen?
It's one of the French food rules. So there are 10 of the rules, and the third one is kids eat what adults eat. There is no short-order cooking. They don't have to actually eat a lot of it. If they refuse to eat it, fine. But no substitutes. French parents do this regularly, and they know that the child will simply be hungrier at the next meal. And they also know that if they give in and start short-order cooking, that it's, you know, a slippery slope. So they basically refuse to do it. And it actually basically means that kids learn to like what their parents normally eat, and so you end up spending less time cooking, and it's more efficient and happy for everyone. So no short-order cooking. I'm with you, Wendy.
Okay, thank you so much, Wendy, for the call. And we'll move next to Nancy in Waukesha. Hi, Nancy.
Hello, yes. I'd like to make mostly a comment. I don't think that kids are going to learn how to eat until they're picky. Parents learn how to eat. I think it's important to keep in mind that many parents have grown up with fast foods and don't know how to handle foods. They don't know how to treat foods or to cook. And I really appreciate your guest's comments. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you, Nancy. And it's a just question. As you talked about, apparently Americans are well educated about food, but putting it into practice is another thing, apparently.
That is a great point. I think that it's fair to say that we have a lower proportion of people who actually spend time cooking than in many other countries, and that skills are an issue. There are many issues at play here. You know, poverty, access to fresh food. Sociologists have identified a phenomenon called food deserts, where it's actually physically impossible to buy fresh food in a certain area. It's only stores with junk food that are available. So lots going on, but skills and picky parents are definitely part of it. And so the book actually talks about the fact that if you want to change the way your kids eat, you have to change the way you eat. My big issue, for example, was I needed to slow down. Food rule number 8 is that you have to eat more slowly and take time to eat. Ironically, if you do this, you end up eating less and enjoying your food more. And so when I changed that, I found my kids responded really positively. But that, you know, so that lesson is so interesting. I've had many readers who don't have kids write to me and say, I benefited from reading this book because the French food rules, which the French teach to kids, are actually rules that French adults live by, and I needed these rules. I needed the rule about variety. I needed the rule about no snacking, et cetera, et cetera. So her point is absolutely right.
How do you feel like your new eating habits fit into North American culture? I think you live in Vancouver, and you've said that you've pushed dinner time back and your children get one snack. I mean, that must be hard. Was you move amongst other parents and your kids have play dates and you try to make social plans? How does that work?
It is hard. It's a bit of a constant negotiation because basically we don't eat as frequently as a lot of North American families. My kids eat the 3 meals a day and then they have one snack. And other than that, just like French kids, no snacking, even the hungry teenage boys. And believe me, if you cut out snacking, kids have a better appetite at meals. I found this quite stressful at first because I always got anxious when my kids were hungry or I thought they were hungry, but then I learned the difference between having a comfortably empty stomach between meals and truly being hungry. No one wants a kid to be hungry, but if your kid has a comfortably empty stomach, they'll approach the next meal with more of an appetite. So having learned that lesson, we do try to maintain that in Vancouver, and so I find myself refusing snacks, for example. Especially right before meal times. And that's not necessarily easy, but people are surprisingly receptive. It's a kind of an obvious point. And so, in fact, it's had a nice ripple effect around us with families moderating their snacking behavior and having really good results at mealtimes.
So what time is your family dinner?
We normally eat between 6:30 and 7.
Okay, so not as late as the French, which are, what, 8 o'clock or 7:30?
8 o'clock, 7:30, yeah. 8 o'clock, yeah. And so I find that you need to allow at least 2 hours in between the after-school snack and dinner for the children to feel properly hungry. The after-school snack is often fruit, though, so that digests pretty quickly. Also, I do think for younger children, eating their main meal a little bit later helps them sleep through the night better and longer because they're less hungry. So that was another incentive when my daughters were younger.
Let's take another phone call now. We've got Natalie joining us. Natalie joining us from Lancaster. Hi, Natalie.
Hi there. My family could probably be like a case study for your book because it's pretty much exactly what our problems are. We've got an 8-month-old and a 3-year-old, and I feed the 8-month-old, and then I make dinner for the rest of us, and I eat it standing up and quickly just try to shove it in my mouth so that I can get the 8-month-old in bed by 7. And I guess, so I definitely am going to eat your book. And my question is, the 3-year-old, he just wants to snack all day, and it's all the beige foods like you were talking about. My husband and I eat very healthy. We eat a lot of salads and fruits and veggies, and he won't eat anything that we eat. So I always make him something different, which is usually a bowl of cereal or toast or something. So we try to get him to try whatever we're eating, and even to get him to try, like, one tiny, like, a pea is just a huge drama, just knock down, drag out, crying, and this horrible thing. So many times we just don't even go there because we don't even want to deal with it. So what do you recommend? I mean, like if the little French kids probably have the same pickiness, like you said, at first, do you force them? I mean, do you just insist that they cannot get up until they eat that one little bite and try it?
That is such a good question, and I really feel for you because my older daughter was really picky. The first thing I'd say is that don't despair, but it is much better to start introducing lots of variety before the age of 2. And so with your younger child, I'd really encourage you to introduce way more variety than you would even think would be possible. The French, for example, are told that the first foods for babies are things like leek soup or spinach puree. Or I'm not kidding. I have a recipe for spinach puree in my book.
Spinach, I can see. Leek soup is a new one.
It's not strong, but they get the taste of leeks because the idea is when that inevitable picky phase happens at the age of 2, they will already have been exposed to a broader range of flavors. And so they will start restricting some of their likes, but they won't restrict as much. Now, what do you do if you have a child who is determined not to taste new foods? Well, that happens in about 1 in 20 kids, the scientific studies show. And although the majority of kids with a bit of insistence will actually taste a food, some kids are really persistent and won't. The advice from the French is, and this is French food rule number 6, tell them you don't have to like it, but you do have to taste it. And you explain to them that over time through tasting it, they'll learn to like it. Involving the child in choosing which food they're liking, they're learning to like, can help. So if you're, you know, ask your child, okay, here are 3 things. Which one would you like to learn to like? Involving them in that way sometimes gives them that little bit of autonomy, not too much, but a little bit to make them feel in charge. And then that will help them get over what is really, you know, it's a psychological battle with the parents. They're in the middle of the no phase. This is very typical behavior. The good news is that it usually passes by the time they're 5 or 6, and parents do have to persist so that the restricted diet doesn't become a really ingrained habit. So good luck with that, and also maybe seeing the 8-month-old eat a lot of great vegetable purees and soups will inspire the 3-year-old to do some tasting of their own.
Did it work that way with your daughters?
It did, because my second daughter, they're 4 years apart, tried lots of stuff. By this point, I'd figured out this was the strategy. And because we praised her for it, the older one, at first reluctantly, but then with increasing enthusiasm, started trying things. because we were serving purees to the younger one, the older one tried that too, and that eliminated a lot of the texture problems that older kids have troubles with. Peas are a classic, for example. Kids don't like to eat a pea at the age of 3 or 4 because they are having trouble with the texture. So so in the book, there are recipes for simple soups that slightly thicker are a puree for a baby and slightly thinner can be a soup even for an adult. And that's a great way to lure these slightly reluctant older kids into you know, encountering these new tastes.
Well, thank you, Natalie, and good luck with your picky eaters.
Yeah, good
there.
Luck.
And we're talking this hour with Karen LeBillon. She's the author of French Kids Eat Everything. And learning about these 10 rules that Karen's come up with to help kids in America eat a wider variety of foods to be less picky. And we haven't gotten to the neatness factor, but that's in there as well. And we're wondering about your experience getting your kids to eat. Are they picky eaters? Did you manage to get around that phenomenon? And how did you do it? I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, as we're joined by Karen LeBillon. She's the author of French Kids Eat Everything. And Karen, we had a caller who was wondering about French attitudes toward dieting and whether you see, for example, as many TV ads for diet products and pills in France.
That's a great question. So obesity rates and rates of overweight are much lower in France. And of course, there are diets in France, but they're much less widespread. A smaller proportion of the population is on a diet at any one time. Why? Well, if you ask the French, they'd simply say, we don't need to diet because we have healthy eating routines that mean we maintain a stable weight. The no snacking rule, for example. So studies have shown that even one extra snack a day of something as simple as a can of Coke can lead to a weight gain of, on average, 5 pounds per year. That adds up pretty quickly. So the traditional French approach, which is changing, but the traditional French approach of no snacking means that this is a healthy routine, which basically prevents them from undesirable weight gain and means they don't need to diet. And certainly diets are fairly unheard of for children, except in exceptional cases. So the nice thing about that is it means people are not as anxious about food, don't have as much guilt about food, don't have the kind of food extremism that we display. They love food. They embrace all food. But they have these kind of built-in checks and balances in their eating routines, which means they don't eat to excess. I'm not saying they eat perfectly. If you go into a French grocery store, you will see processed food. They do have the highest number of McDonald's per capita in Europe, and it's not only
really
American tourists eating there. Oh, yeah, they do. But it's just a once-in-a-while treat. And that's the point. It's not the drive-thru every night. It's not the processed food every night. For example, food pouches, which are all the rage for young kids now in North America, and have inspired some debate because some families are starting to use them more and more as meal substitutes. They've been around in France for longer than we've had them here. And again, they're a once-in-a-while treat. So I think that lesson about the fact that moderation and healthy routines can help us avoid creating the problems in the first place is a key one. All of it, of course, in an atmosphere of food being fun, not food not being a source of anxiety.
Well, and going hand in hand with that, I think it's your first rule is no emotional eating, right? You're not supposed to use food to reward a child or to punish a child, ever.
That's right. That is food rule number 2, meaning don't associate emotional cues with eating. So we don't feed a child when they're bored or they're tired or they're distracted or you need 5 more minutes on the phone, and we don't do it randomly. So my habit of giving my child a cookie in the checkout line at the grocery store because she's been well-behaved, that was a no-no, as I learned because I was scolded by French mothers for doing this early on after we moved, much to my chagrin.
And they're pretty free with their scolding, too, aren't they?
They're pretty free. And this is not a nice thing about living in France, because especially me living in a small village as one of the only foreigners in a quite conservative part of France, you know, I had a bit of an earful, especially from my mother-in-law. But the lessons they were conveying, I think, were based on, as I said earlier, not only cultural common sense, but actually some interesting science. So the emotional eating rule is intended to make sure that your children don't grow up into adults who turn to food for emotional comfort or solace. And emotional eating, as we know, is a big issue for adults. So making sure that food isn't a bribe, a reward, a punishment, a distraction, which is easier when you schedule meals and don't snack in between.
Well, let's see. Go back to the phones right now, and we have Terry joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Thank you for your show. It's awesome.
Oh, great.
When I raised my daughter, she got fresh foods, period, when she was ready to go on solid food. So instead of buying a jar of carrots, I would buy carrots, puree them for her, and that's what she got to eat. As she got older, we did have the three-bite rule. You didn't have to eat it, but you did have to try it. And she is now doing the same thing with her children, and my daughter is in great physical condition. She is not overweight. I work for a large corporation, and I look around me, 70% of our staff is morbidly obese. How do you turn that around?
That's a great point, and I don't think the solutions are entirely individual. Good eating starts in the home, and I love the example that was given about, you know, trying three bites, and that's fantastic. But we face so many pressures today with respect to food marketing and the sorts of foods that are served in schools that this is about a community solutions as well as individual solutions. So dramatically changing school food is one strategy. Introducing taste training in schools, so it's food education in the curriculum. Like French teachers in France are actually formally trained in food appreciation techniques, and they teach these to children. They have all sorts of fun games that we could be teaching kids. For example, kids are taught early on about the different flavors, sour, sweet, salty, bitter. Learn about taste buds. They have fun games where they have a surprise bag, and in the bag there's a food, and you have to touch it without looking at it and figure out what it is. This is really difficult. You know, listeners, try this in a bag with a cherry tomato, a grape, and an olive all about the same size. It's actually really hard. So learning about how you engage with food with all of your senses, touch, hearing, smell, sight. Kids do all of this in France. We could do that in the curriculum. This is really important, basic stuff to be teaching our kids. These are life skills. Knowing how to eat is a life skill. So so there are changes you could make in schools. There are changes you can make at home. And I think we're going to have to face up to the fact that we're going to have to put stricter controls on food marketing to kids.
Listening to all the ways that the French approach food from school and in the home, it strikes me that it's very, at this point, institutionalized. They have it down to a science, more or less, whereas here it seems as though every individual family has to kind of reinvent the wheel.
That is so true, and it's exhausting. We live in a culture in which we have an enormous amount of choice. Choice is liberating, but it's also burdensome. I call it the burden of choice. You have to think about, you know, how are you going to sleep? Co-sleep, crib in room, crib in another room, you know, when are you going to wean, what are you going to feed, in what order? The French are given many more instructions as new parents about how to do all of this. That's not good for kids and families who don't fit the mold. For example, vegetarians and vegans fare very badly in France. So the one-size-fits-all approach is not great for everyone, but it does provide structure in which you know, you are confronted with fewer choices, and the structure has been well thought out over generations of, you know, both practical experience and scientific testing. So you can go ahead with some reassurance that this is not going to dramatically screw up your child. So, and I think that that stepping back from our commitment to individual choice and autonomy and thinking about some shared structures that we could agree on might not be a bad thing. For example, do our kids need three or four choices at the school cafeteria? In France, they only get one choice. They go to school. There is one thing on the menu. It's tasty. They eat it. Point. Lower food wastage. This is one reason why their meals cost less, because they have a lot less wastage. And you know, I was really worried about this because I thought, you know, autonomy was really important around food when they were young. And then I realized, you know what, those kids are too young to have autonomy. If given a choice between, like, strawberry-flavored milk and water, what are they going to pick? So I do think that giving up some of our individual autonomy in order for these broader structures to be put in place that teach our kids good values, I'm actually now in favor of that. But I know that's a controversial suggestion.
I want to read a couple of emails here. Well, this is from Pat in Hayward, who says, is there portion control or is it just natural to eat slower and less? And secondly, is it expensive to shop at the grocery store or markets? I hear you talking about mussels and scallops. Are they less expensive there? And what about using foods that are in season?
Wow, three great questions. So the French do eat slower, more slowly. They did a great study comparing McDonald's in Paris and Philadelphia. They found that the serving of large fries, which is supposed to be standard, was 75% larger in Philadelphia on average. But the French took 10 minutes longer to eat their much smaller serving of large fries.
Wow.
So they've been trained from quite a young age to eat slowly, and the amazing thing is that this has a physiological benefit because the fullness feelings that go from your stomach to your brain, the satiety feelings, they take about 20 minutes to settle in. So you are more likely to overeat if you eat in 10 minutes than you are if you eat in 25 or 30. The French eat more slowly, yet they eat less. So this is a way in which they have automatic portion control. They do also have just a habit of having smaller servings, and you'll see that in restaurants, and you'll see that at the school cafeteria. So it's a combination of the two things. Now, in terms of grocery stores and fresh foods, the French have wonderful markets, and they're great. Not everyone goes to them all the time because, you know, not everyone in France lives in a charming stone village with a market just around the corner. It's a bit of a myth, even for the French. So, but supermarkets have adapted. So supermarkets have high-quality, local, fresh produce, and although some of it's more expensive, some of it's not. Because of the way their food system is structured, they orient their subsidies very differently. So, for example, our farm bill subsidizes certain kinds of commodity crops, but not fresh fruits and vegetables. But the equivalent program in Europe subsidizes more fresh fruits and vegetables. So they've worked out a food system that delivers better access to non-processed foods to ordinary families. So that means that even though you're shopping in the supermarket, you can still be able to afford slightly more, not a lot more, than American families to be making fresh meals from scratch, from largely unprocessed ingredients, which is, I think, one of the secrets to, you know, to the effectiveness of the French diet.
Now, Karen, I know you have to leave us in 1 minute. Would you like to leave us with the rule that you feel is the most important to pick out of this?
Yeah, it's food rule number 10. It took me a long time to realize eating is joyful. Relax.
Mm.
We have too many diets. We have too many rules. We have too many anxieties. We have too many worries around food. Letting go of anxiety, which is a big reason kids develop food eating difficulties, is the first step. It sounds totally counterintuitive. We, given how our obesity rates are rising and given how badly we eat, you'd think that anxiety would be the first thing we should be feeling, but it's actually the last thing we should be feeling. If we adopt healthy eating routines, you can let go of that anxiety, and that's the happy, positive message of the book.
Well, thank you so much. It's a great note to leave you with there. And we've got a couple of minutes left as we maybe take one more call. But Karen, thank you so much for joining us.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you so much and take care.
Karen LeBillon, our guest this hour, author of French Kids Eat Everything. And let's take one more call before we go away. Anne joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I had several children very close together. My husband and I were both in school. We had very little money. I had nothing to throw away, but I set the table the way I'd grown up, nicely, you know, not a cloth, maybe sometimes, but I set it for each of us, and everyone came to the table at the same time, and I put the food in serving bowls, family style, in the middle, and I served my husband and myself, and I let the children ask for what they wanted to try. And I did that probably for economic reasons and also, you know, health and
mm-hmm.
stuff. They grew up eating everything. One of the five does not eat one thing, and that's the only thing I can think of. They ate everything. Food became a celebration. You know, like on a holiday, we spent more time cooking. We spent more money buying the ingredients. It was a party, and they all cook now. They're very good cooks. Food is fun and a pleasure and a discovery, and and all those good things. Although I don't see them doing that with their kids.
Well, maybe they'll get to it later. Oh, that's wonderful to hear. Sounds like you've got the joy part down, Anne. Thank you so much for your call. And thank you to Cynthia Schuster for running the board and Rachel Owens for answering your phone call and Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. If you'd like a copy of this program, you can call the radio store at 1-800-747-7444 and ask for program 629E. I'm Veronica Rickert, wishing you a wonderful weekend here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.